From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen, and this week's topic of discussion, affordable housing. We have a number of guests with us, and we're interested in hearing from you throughout the program. The phone number, 800-621-8890. The email address, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. We have a Facebook page, and you can interact with us there. You can also follow us and then send us a tweet on Twitter, at WEKUEST. On this Thursday morning, let's talk first to our guests who are in the studio. We'll introduce them to you, and then we will talk also to one guest who's on the phone line this morning. But first up in the studio, Judy Flavel is Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity of Madison and Clark Counties, a position she assumed in 2010. Prior to that, she worked in public broadcasting for more than 30 years, including a four-year stay as Director of Promotion and Development here at WEKU. Judy, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, John.
Welcome back, although I wasn't here when you were here.
Yeah, a little different than it was 20 years ago.
Well, we'll be interested in your perspectives maybe after the show. But Tom Manning Bevan also is with us, and Tom is Director of Housing with the Kentucky Highlands Investment Corporation and President of the Southern Tier Housing Corporation. Kentucky Highlands Investment Corporation was founded in 1968 to stimulate growth and to create jobs in southeastern Kentucky. Tom, thanks for being with us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
We will learn in a little bit what each of you do, but also let's introduce on the telephone line Council Member Chris Ford, elected to the Fayette Urban County Council in 2010, subsequently elected for a second term, which began in 2012. Mr. Ford is a licensed real estate agent, as well as a community development consultant. He represents the 1st District. Chris Ford, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
First up, as part of our conversation this morning, we want to talk to Mayor Jim Gray. I spoke with him earlier this morning. And earlier this month, Mayor Gray in Lexington announced that $3.5 million of the city's $13 million surplus would be allocated for affordable housing and homelessness initiatives. Prior to his election in 2010, Jim Gray served as vice mayor of the city, was formerly chairman and CEO of Gray Construction. And just a little while ago this morning, I asked Mayor Jim Gray about the city's investment of $3.5 million of surplus funds for housing and homelessness initiatives and why this is essential for Lexington.
John, one thing that I've recognized and realized since I've been in this role and lived in Lexington is that Lexington's always willing to step up and take on challenges, always willing to take bold action when it's required. And the fact is that today there are just too many who, in our community, who can't afford safe, affordable housing. And interestingly, now this affordable housing challenge is partly due to our success. And, you know, that may sound counterintuitive, but a stronger economy that we're experiencing in Lexington has produced many high-paying jobs. And with that, the demand for higher-priced rental housing has increased. But at the same time, wages for lower-skilled workers has not kept pace with housing costs. Now, this is something that we are seeing, you know, it's not unique really to Lexington, it's across the country. The real challenge is, okay, how do we deal with it in our city? So that's really where we are today. The acute problem we have today and in the foreseeable future is more about affordable rental housing for lower wage earners.
How do you define affordable housing?
Well, when you think of it in terms of average incomes and then a family of four and then the standard of housing that would be expected. Now, you're not talking about, you know, extraordinary, or you're not talking about luxury at all. You're talking about minimal levels. And a rental unit under, well, a rental unit around $700 to $800 is high on that affordability scale. So we're looking at those who need housing at lower than $700, $800 a month.
And of course, based on income, that could be a substantial portion of their income.
And we've commissioned a study. The city commissioned a study of affordable housing, and it was presented to the council a few weeks ago. And actually, that study revealed that there are 15,000 households in Lexington, and these are non-student households that make too little money to pay a fair market rent for decent housing. And only about 9 or 10,000 of those 15,000 receive federal or state assistance. So that's a significant number.
One of the
and this number has actually, John, interested too. That this number has risen. Those in need of affordable housing, that number has risen, especially since 1990. So in the last 25 years, that number has. The number of those in need of affordable housing has grown substantially.
Mm-hmm. I guess as part of this effort to set aside $3.5 million for affordable housing and homelessness, you've appointed a director of the newly created Office on Homelessness Prevention and Intervention, Charlie Lanter. What do you hope this office will be able to achieve? What will be its mission and its purpose?
Charlie has been appointed to that role, and he comes to the role with a lot of experience through the Community Action Council, his previous role there. But homelessness is a complex issue, and homelessness, affordable housing, and wages and compensation patterns and trends all really connect. So our economy is a big influence in all of these issues. But homelessness itself is a tough issue, and it's that there are no cookie-cutter solutions. And it requires what I consider to be meaningful collaboration, creative problem solving. We all know that Lexington has many really remarkable service providers. These service providers are what I would describe as we have a compelling need for collaboration among them and for leadership, which occurs, of course, organically within any group, but the opportunity for a meaningful, deliberate, intentional collaboration and leadership in this area is really what Charlie's role would provide.
What impact do you think that Lexington's efforts will have on the region beyond the city-county government? Of course, our listeners are across a big section of central and southeastern Kentucky. Will success and improvement in affordable housing in Lexington reach out 50, 100, 200 miles?
Well, what I've discovered, John, is that Lexington is a caring and a giving community, and we are influenced by our neighbors, and our neighbors are influenced by us. So we really work together in many ways, and this is another opportunity for us to work together. These are tough issues that we need to take on head on, and I believe that we'll be a stronger community because of the steps that we're taking here recently, and it will influence, as you've mentioned, it will influence the entire region. It's important for us to think that way.
Having set aside this money to start this new office and the current efforts and initiatives, how will this program be sustained in the future? Do you anticipate similar funding in future years?
And that's an issue that we're working on now. Our Planning Commissioner, Derek Paulson, has taken on the task of developing a plan that should provide the confidence for sustainability, how sustainability is translated in terms of financial and the planning model, the operational model is still an issue that's going to be before the council. And what I see is a commitment to this problem solving, and that itself is of commendable in so many respects. It's a reflection of the advocacy efforts by many in our community, including the BUILD community, and others as well.
As you take steps and move forward with these homelessness and affordable housing initiatives, what economic benefits do you see for the Lexington region?
When you have a workforce that can get up in the morning and have confidence that they're going to get through the day, when the stress and tension levels are relieved. I've learned this in a business, in growing a family business over my career, that when your employees are feel good about themselves, and when they get up in the morning feeling good about themselves, it's very much to the benefit of the business, and it all works together in a holistic way, and that's exactly, in many respects, that's the way a community works as well. When we think the word organization, we think, you know, the root of organization is organic. And just as our community needs are met, our individual needs are met. So this, in many respects, is working to address the needs in a community. Now, there's many of them are systemic, economic trends and issues that we're dealing with, you know, within Lexington and beyond our borders in America. The good news is that there are efforts being made. Now, sometimes those efforts won't be made perfectly, but the efforts and the progressive steps forward are being made, and that's what we should recognize and be thankful for and be proud of.
Charlie Lanter comes on board as the new Director of Homelessness Prevention and Intervention. When? When does he come into the office?
Charlie is on duty quite soon. I'm not sure of the exact date, but I've met with him, and we're all excited about his approach and his experience that he brings to the table. His approach is a very collaborative approach, and so that has been encouraging and inspiring for me.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing how this effort and these initiatives pan out. Mayor Jim Gray, thank you so much for being with us on Eastern Standard.
John, thank you. Thank you.
And in just a few moments, we'll speak with Councilmember Chris Ford and our guests in the studio, Tom Manning Bevan and Judy Flavel. We're discussing affordable housing on this week's Eastern Standard, and we do want to talk about the need for affordable housing and what efforts are being made across the Lexington region as well as other sections of central and southeastern Kentucky. Your stories, your questions, and your comments are certainly invited at 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and then send us a tweet at WEKUEST. Or post your message on Facebook and continue the conversation after the show as well on the Facebook page. That phone number again, 800-621-8890. We'll take a short break and be right back with more of Eastern Standard on WEKU. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen with our guests, Tom Manning Bevan, Judy Flavel, and Councilmember Chris Ford, representing District 1 in Lexington. Councilmember Ford, we were just listening to your colleague, Mayor Jim Gray, in discussing Lexington's efforts to study and find ways to alleviate homelessness and develop affordable housing. Your reaction to what you've heard from the mayor this morning?
Well, John, I think that the mayor is has given a lot of study and a lot of attention to this issue of affordable housing. It's an issue that has been long coming to our local government. I started my term on council in 2011, and I think it's fair to say in regards to the proposal to create an affordable housing trust fund, those conversations began in 2008. So we're seven years into the process, and the mayor's commitment of $3.5 million, I think, really gets us closer to the ultimate goal of finding solutions for affordable housing.
Is that $3.5 million essentially seed money, or is that the budget for the first year of this effort?
I think it's safe to say it's both, but it serves as seed money to capitalize the fund. Again, the major goal of housing advocates, myself included, has been the creation of a trust fund. And by definition, we recognize a trust fund as a dedicated source of revenue to support the operations of that fund for housing. And so we have the needed funds, which will help us in the coming fiscal year 2015. And it's a major symbol of progress, but we have to find a dedicated source year over year, and at this point, that's to be determined. Hopefully, we'll find it soon.
Among your colleagues on Lexington Council, is there agreement in general over these issues of homelessness and affordable housing? Is this something that everyone is supporting in terms of, and especially with this support by providing $3.5 million?
That's correct, John. I think council's deliberation on this issue has evolved and progressed, again, since the time of 2008. And, of course, council, we serve two-year terms, so we've had some turnover in members. But I mentioned publicly in a session a few days ago, I truly believe that every member, 15 members of council, recognize the crunch on housing and homelessness issues as important. It was really brought home to bear with the one of the consultants' reports, I believe CZB, which really exposed how dire a need that the housing is and that the mayor referenced a while ago. The challenge has been and continues to be till now, how do we fund it? How do we incorporate this need in with the other priorities of our government? And I think that as we stand right now in 2014, housing has elevated, and I'm glad to say, but I hope we find a revenue source here soon. The proposed revenue source heretofore, an increase in the insurance premium tax, has not yielded the support we need politically. But if not that source, our responsibility is to find the acceptable source, the responsible source.
Is this problem one that is readily visible? From my experience, and I imagine there are other listeners in our audience who would say, when you drive through Lexington or take a walk through the city, you're not likely, I've yet to encounter a homeless person on the street. Does that mean then that the problem is really something that's not as visible and in some other major urban areas?
John, that's a great point you bring. I would say, luckily for Lexington, we've had much success in the last decade or so with housing revitalization and new construction. Of course, we're a college town, and the multifamily units to accommodate our students who are here with us temporarily. And then also our local housing authority has had great success in moving away from the traditional barrack-style project housing complexes. But we still have folks who are kind of priced out of the market. And while visible signs of massive blight may not be to the scale of other cities of our size, it's still safe to say that we have a long ways to go in regards to providing the affordability that's needed. The consultant's report mentioned that a part of the problem, one of the factors, is our prosperity as a city. The economic prosperity has actually not allowed low-wage workers or working folks to keep up with the escalating cost of housing.
Okay, we want to talk housing, affordable housing, and homelessness in Kentucky across the Commonwealth, of course, in the urban areas such as Lexington. But we want to move out of Lexington and talk with guests who are working with those beyond the Lexington borders as well. Councilmember Chris Ford will remain with us, but we also want to draw into the conversation Judy Flavel with Habitat Madison Clark, Habitat for Humanity. Judy, my personal knowledge of Habitat for Humanity goes back, you know, what is it, 35, 40 years or something? We all heard about it, I guess, in many ways, very visibly after President Carter left office and began building houses, physically participating in building houses, I guess even at an advanced age, he's still doing so. Is that the primary work of Habitat?
That's right. Habitat for Humanity was founded in 1976 by Millard and Linda Fuller. Many people think President Carter founded Habitat. But he got involved and definitely gave more visibility to the effort. Habitat for Humanity brings people together to build homes, communities, and hope. We strongly believe that that we all need a safe, decent, affordable place to call home before we can grow into who we're meant to be. So housing is much more than walls and a floor and a roof. It's a place where people become families, people can really be in touch with who they are and grow into people who can serve the community. So Habitat for Humanity works in partnership with families to provide them housing that's affordable based on their income. Habitat for Humanity builds largely with a volunteer workforce including partner families who are required to provide at least 350 hours of sweat equity. They help build their house and the homes of others alongside volunteers. And then those families pay a mortgage on their home based on their income at 0% interest. So, and then those mortgage payments go back into the Fund for Humanity. Those funds, along with those of donors and sponsors and sales from our ReStore, which is a retail store that works off of donations from the community, those funds go back into building more homes for families.
Judy is Executive Director of Habitat Madison Clark. You're based in Richmond. Your service area includes Berea, areas of Clark County, and so forth. How widespread is Habitat in Kentucky? Of course, I imagine there's a Fayette County branch or Lexington and beyond our service area throughout central and southeastern Kentucky.
Yes. Habitat for Humanity of Madison and Clark counties, we serve those two counties, including Winchester, Berea, and Richmond. Lexington Habitat for Humanity is going to, we're going to build our 100th house. We're ready to dedicate in a couple of weeks our 100th house.
Just in Lexington?
No, in Madison and Clark counties.
Oh, okay.
Now, the Lexington Habitat for Humanity, they'll be dedicating their 400th house this year. And there are about 47 Habitat for Humanity affiliates in the state of Kentucky serving 51 counties.
Wow. Okay. Judy Flavel is Executive Director of Habitat Madison Clark, and she's here to respond to listener questions and comments as well as our other guests. 800-621-8890 is our phone number. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com is our email address. On Twitter, at WEKUEST, and we're also on Facebook. That phone number, again, 800-621-8890. Let's turn to Tom Manning Beaven, Director of Housing with the Kentucky Highlands Investment Corporation and the Southern Tier Housing Corporation. Tom, is your work similar to that of Habitat?
In some ways, it is. It is involved. It involves families in building their homes. We have a mutual self-help program that we operate mostly in Wayne County, Kentucky, and that program brings together families and they cooperatively build their homes. The families spend 30 hours a week in the construction phase building their homes. It takes about 8 months to build the homes, and we have staff people that guide them through that process. We're pulling together groups of 5 to 8 families, mostly, and it's a tremendously successful program. The Mutual Self-Help Program is a nationwide program. We utilize a grant from the USDA to help support our staff costs, and that grant is a grant that lots of organizations, over 100 organizations nationwide, utilize to develop mutual self-help housing. Coming up next year, that program will build its 50,000th house nationwide.
Wow!
So that's
1,000 per state.
Mm-hmm. It's a program that's been operating for about 50 years, and lots of success stories. Just one I'll share. We have a family just moved into their home, and they moved out of a rental house that was so energy inefficient that they kept the thermostat in the winter at about 52 degrees so that their electric bill would be less than $500 a month.
Wow. The economy took a big hit in the last 5 years or so, and many of us who would consider ourselves perhaps better off than the quote, homeless people find it difficult to pay mortgages, or folks have had, folks have been repossessed and had issues in that regard. How has the economy affected the efforts of organizations such as the Highlands Investment Corporation or Habitat for Humanity?
Of course, it's created more of a need for affordable housing and more of a challenge in lining up funds to meet those needs. So the volunteer workforce is very important, as is the collection of donors who make housing possible. And also, the work of people like Councilman Ford and Mayor Jim Gray to look at the local situation of affordable housing and put in place something like the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. you know, we talk about affordable housing and homelessness, and I think it's important to recognize that more as a continuum. We do have that sort of standard vision of someone on the street asking for money or having a sign saying they're homeless and will work for food. And yes, that is on one end of the continuum for homelessness. But in Kentucky, particularly in the rural areas, homelessness has a lot of different faces or people struggling with housing problems. We think, oh, if someone has a place to sleep at night, they're good. Well, what if the place to sleep at night is a place similar to what Tom was talking about, where the utility bills are $400 or $500 a month, and you have a family working a minimum wage job? That's simply not affordable. We have a family who's just been approved for the Habitat program, and they were living in a rural part of Madison County in a trailer, a substandard trailer with a lot of electrical issues. They're on the list for a Habitat for Humanity home, and went home a couple weeks ago to fire trucks in the drive, and their heating unit had caused an electrical fire, and they lost everything. Hmm. So suddenly they're homeless, right? So how many steps away from homelessness is a person so on the edge with limited income? And the economy definitely brought people closer to that edge, and we're working really hard to help people. And the families who benefit from the services are working really hard as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it also, the downturn, it led to cuts in the federal budget as well as
yes.
state funds. And we our program utilizes a federal mortgage from the USDA, the 502 Direct program. And that's the loan families pay back. And then their borrowing power sometimes doesn't fully finance the home. And so we go and find other sources, sources that we can defer over time or forgive. And those sources are harder to find in this environment. But I think also that the downturn has made the impacts of affordable housing development and housing development generally even more important. The family that I talked about, when they moved out of that rental home and into that new home, in order to build that house, we bought materials at a local lumber shed. We used local subcontractors to install the electrical and the plumbing and the HVAC to install the siding and the roofing. And that new home adds to the tax base in Wayne County. One of the contractors we work with, we talked with them about 3 years ago, and just as the full effects of the economic downturn were hitting Wayne County, and the question we asked was how does our self-help program impact you, or how did it impact you? And they said, you know, it's just a husband and wife who install roofing and siding and guttering. They said, you know, we hadn't worked for 6 months before you started your program, and your work was everything to us. You know, we were about to lose everything. And you know, your opportunities came along, and we bid on the jobs. We got the jobs, we got paid, and we were able to hold it together.
Tom Manning Beaven, Director of Housing with Kentucky Highlands Investment Corporation. We also have with us Judy Flavel of Habitat Madison Clark, and Councilmember Chris Ford. How do organizations such as these represented play into the plans and the efforts in Fayette County and Lexington?
They play a very vital role here in our community. And to simply put, we wouldn't be able to provide the services in regards to housing development if it weren't for a great coalition of nonprofits. I had the fortune, of course, to be a city staffer in our community development division, and then also, working in the field, so to speak, for a local nonprofit called REACH, which helps first-time home buyers. So I have a perspective that I hope helps our council understand how complex these issues are. One thing that was mentioned earlier by, I think, both Julie and Tom, they talked about the involvement via funding from federal and even state sources. We are excited about the opportunity for Lexington finally to provide some local sources, because organizations such as Habitat and Highlands can benefit greatly and have more impact if a small portion of local funds were available to leverage the state and even the federal, and then also the private dollars that help spur economic development and affordable housing.
What is the difference between, some are certainly obvious, between urban areas such as Lexington and the more rural communities served by Highlands Investment Corporation or Habitat in outlying areas of Kentucky?
I think the face of homelessness or poverty housing might be a little bit different among those areas, or their perception of what affordable housing is and means. And the funding sources are different. Thanks to Mr. Ford and others, Lexington is looking at a source of local funding with an affordable housing trust fund. Those funds aren't always available in rural areas. So the funding mix is different. The challenges in what homelessness or the need for housing looks like, I think, is different. And I know, Tom, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think that every community has its own landscape, and that's economic, that's incomes, that's whether or not there's income disparity, that's and what is available in terms of housing stock. And in a lot of small communities, there is a need for rental, and there's also a need for home ownership. And I think the challenge in rural America is that having the having a scale of rental is difficult. So finding it, the mix is good.
We need to take a short break, and I want to invite our listeners in Hazard and Corbin and Pineville and Pikeville and Barberville to get on board. 800-621-8890. Of course, Lexington, we're glad to hear from you. 800-621-8890, WEKU, easternstandard@gmail.com. Homelessness, our topic on Eastern Standard. Eastern Standard continues for another 20 minutes live on this Thursday morning on the WEKU stations. We're talking affordable housing and homelessness. 800-621-8890 is our phone number. You are invited to get on board if you have a question, a comment, a personal story of the challenges of finding affordable housing, or maybe even a success story. Tom has shared some good success stories with us here this morning. Tom Manning Beaven and Judy Flavel are involved in helping to provide affordable housing to people across various regions and counties in the Kentucky, central, southeastern Kentucky. We're interested in hearing from you from throughout the region as well as from the Lexington area. Council member Chris Ford also with us from Lexington area. Tom, you were talking about the challenges of finding affordable housing, rental versus the purchasing of homes.
Right. I think the mix in is different in every community. Often in urban America, the mix is weighted towards rental. It's more cost effective to develop rental in urban areas where you can achieve a scale and appropriately staff that rental housing. And then you're also having a wider gap of the affordability gap, the difference between what it costs to develop a home and what a family can finance. That gap is wider often in urban America. In rural America, we tend to weight that mix more towards homeownership because there's an opportunity to develop it in a cost-effective manner, and it's also relatively difficult to achieve an appropriate scale in rental housing.
Another question to toss out to our listeners: how important is that American dream of home ownership? Is it important to you to have a home and have a deed to a home, or at least a mortgage to a home? Or is living comfortably more your goal? We're talking affordable housing, talking homelessness on Eastern Standard, 800-621-8890. Council member Chris Ford, what do you think about the American dream of home ownership? Is that in urban areas and of the cities of our country and, of course, of the Commonwealth, is that the primary goal, making sure that people get an opportunity to own property?
I think it's very important. I think for sustainable neighborhoods and communities, I think that as best we can assist our residents, particularly low to moderate folks, achieve the dream of home ownership, we should. I think that while income limitations will serve as a barrier, we should encourage that. And whether it be through financial literacy, whether it be through availing folks to the needed resources to match financial products geared towards the dream of home ownership, I think we should. I think what I fear is that the recent economic recession, primarily housing, had a lot to do with that, of course. But the perception or the stigma that programs that help first-time home buyers or low-income home buyers was the primary reason for the entirety of the downfall is not correct, and I think it has kind of diminished the focus or the need for helping home ownership. But I think that we will continue to see home ownership, both in urban and rural areas, be very important. But it's to find the right balance. I know that much of our crises right now in Lexington, as the Mayor Gray mentioned, revolves around needed rental housing. And I think that they both intertwine because folks, we need a good balance of both. But I think in the long term, we still, and hopefully we will see home ownership opportunities rebound at affordable levels.
And that is important. I'd like to just interject here. We recognize as Habitat for Humanity that home ownership may not be the best solution for every person who is struggling with housing issues. At the same time, there have been a number of studies done, the World Health Organization and others, tell us that housing has a significant impact on a person's life. And there was one study done by Harvard University in particular about home ownership. And that study found that children of homeowners are less likely to become teen mothers. They have higher math and reading scores, 25% more likely to graduate from high school, and 116% more likely to graduate from college. So there are some distinct benefits of home ownership from these studies. Again, we recognize that's not for everyone, but we also recognize, there are huge benefits to safe, simple, decent, affordable housing, period. And then home ownership might offer some additional benefits.
Absolutely.
Let's go to the phone and talk to Melissa from Johnson City, Tennessee. Melissa, thank you so much for calling. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Thank you for having me. I have the pleasure of working with the Appalachia Service Project. And we work throughout Appalachia and in Kentucky. Wanted to say a few things. One, to say thank you to your guests for the work that they're doing. It's definitely an amazing big problem that is happening in Appalachia with safe housing. The issues with affordable housing are broad. With rentals, with home ownership, Appalachia Service Project deals with rehab. I like the story that Julie talked about earlier about the family who came home to a burnt-down mobile home. We see cases like that all the time. One of the first families that I worked for in the area, we were working for them in the summer, but she talked to me about how the water in the pots froze in her home inside of the house during the wintertime. So the fact that safe housing affects health, affects ability to build a firm foundation for more successful lives, I think is a big issue and something that is an important topic. So thank you guys so much for bringing this up.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Melissa. And you actually point out again that issue of the invisibility of the housing problem. Just because someone has a roof over their head, just because they're behind closed doors, you don't know what's going on, if it's cold or there are gas leaks or vermin in the house.
Yeah. Well, and oddly enough, Melissa, I got my start working for Appalachia Service Project in Jonesville, Virginia.
Oh, really?
I did.
Wonderful.
I think your work and the work of other organizations like ASP highlight the need for a continuum. We have a need for homeless services and solutions for homelessness. We have a need for emergency home repair and major rehabilitation and new construction and then rental as well. I think there's a whole continuum of need.
Melissa, thank you for your call to Eastern Standard. We invite others to get on board with your questions, your comments, your personal stories about homelessness and or affordable housing. 800-621-8890. You're welcome to send us an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest or post on Facebook. That phone number, again, 800-621-8890. For all three of our guests here, what is the difference or the effect you all have seen for first-time home buyers, the impact on their families and on their personal lives when someone who's never owned a home before, Judy with Habitat for Humanity, someone's never owned a home, and you obviously are working closely with these families and get to know them well. Talk about the effect you're observing.
Yes. Oh, so many stories come to mind. I'll share with you just a couple. Farah is a woman who came to us, single mother of two daughters, and was working in industry locally and doing okay. She shares the story of having grown up in a home where her mom struggled with alcoholism. They spent holidays in cars and in motel rooms. And she was interested in having a home for herself and her two girls. She came to Habitat, worked very hard to build her house alongside volunteers. And today, she's often with us at events to tell her story of what a significant difference Habitat has made in her life. She now is remarried and has a third child and has done wonderful things with her home, which is actually out in the county in Madison County. We have another family, Terry. She came as a single mom to Habitat as well, and her daughters have graduated from college, the first generation to graduate in their family. We have other homeowners who tell us that now they can, because their energy bills are more affordable, they can afford better food, they can afford the gas to drive back and forth to work, they can access higher education, which is something they might not have had the funding or even the mental space for when they were struggling with affordable housing.
Councilmember Chris Ford, why do we still have homelessness or people living in housing that is substandard in this society where we are pretty much affluent and well off? And I'm not hearing any disagreement. No one, I would imagine no one feels that people should be forced to live in substandard conditions. Why does this problem continue? What are there political realities that have made this an issue?
Well, we learned with the report that the consultants brought us a few weeks ago. I mentioned earlier in the show that Lexington's prosperity, overall, the economy of our city, kind of may present some unintended pressures on the affordability of housing for folks on the low income end. I think then we also see on a parallel track to our work with affordable housing is our study of the issue of homelessness, which I've shared with council. Is very close issues, closely associated, but the practical aspects of addressing those issues have some distinctions. And in regards to homelessness, there are issues in regards to health. There's issues in regards to mental health, substance abuse. Several factors may impact education, of course, employability. There are a myriad of factors that may impact someone or families battle with affording housing. So we want to study those as well. But we also think that here in Lexington, so to speak, is that we haven't, to the scale that we have needed, worked to ensure that we not only create additional housing, but that we at least maintain the number of units that we need. We're thousands of units short. And I also want to mention, John, that it doesn't necessarily mean the construction of new units. I know, for example, Julian Habitat does a great deal of work with their new construction and sweat equity that their clients put in above and beyond the financial commitments that they make to become financially prepared. But here, I think Rachel Childress and the good folks of the Lexington Habitat chapter or even looking towards rehab, how we can convert underutilized units in neighborhoods to provide more housing stock. I think quantity of the availability of housing will help us in the long term.
Let's go back to the phone and talk to Gerald from Irvine. Gerald, thanks for calling Eastern Standard. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Yes. I was just kind of wondering, you know, like you make, you know, just a little bit above minimum wage. You're a single, you know, single parent, two kids, renting a place. And it's kind of hard to get out of that situation when you're limited on income. You know, you could probably go get a place, but you're, you know, like the down payment and all the expense of getting out of that and getting into something.
Right, that's true. So the definition of affordable housing, that came up a little bit earlier in our conversation. And the definition really is affordable housing needs to be lower than 30% of someone's gross income. So if somebody is paying, for example, $800 for rent, that means they need to have an annual gross income of $28,800. And that's well over a minimum wage job. A $10 an hour job for a year is just shy of $21,000. So you do make, Gerald, a really good point about just above a minimum wage job, how do you afford home ownership or housing? And that's why organizations like Habitat for Humanity and Kentucky Highlands exist, to work with families to help. We at Habitat, we match folks with a financial coach. We work with Kentucky River Foothills, and there are budgeting classes, and we work on your particular budget to help you get to a place of readiness for home ownership if that's what you're interested in doing. So Habitat families have to meet income guidelines in order to make sure that they can afford home ownership and that is the right solution for them, and also have that income level where buying a home in the general marketplace would not be possible.
Gerald, thank you for your call to this week's Eastern Standard on WEKU. We have just about 3 minutes remaining in our program, so let's turn to solutions. And I'm looking at Tom Manning Beaven here. Lexington's put a little bit of money aside to move in the direction of helping with this problem. What else is needed, and what can our listeners and all of us do together to make this happen?
Sure. Well, both Judy's organization and my organization are members of a regional organization called FAHI, which is an acronym for the Federation of Appalachian Housing Enterprises. And FAHI is a network of 55 organizations throughout Central Appalachia. As Gerald was talking, I was thinking that it takes an organization in a local community to be able to work on one need at a time. That is one individual, one family at a time, because it boils down to trying to meet those needs on an individual basis. So I think solutions involve having a robust infrastructure of organizations. That can be a public organization, a housing authority. Often it's nonprofits like Habitat, like Kentucky Highlands, like a myriad of organizations in East Kentucky, all of whom are providing a really vital service. And then there's roles for private sector, and certainly there's roles for government. I think, as I've mentioned and Chris has mentioned, there's a need for support from the federal level, state level. Kentucky Housing Corporation has done a lot to provide support, and then local government to the extent that it can provide either funds or support with infrastructure.
All right. And Tom, I assume your organization, as well as Judy and Habitat, can use volunteers and help from the general public.
Absolutely. You know, crunching some numbers, I find that in our service area in Madison and Clark counties, there are 8,204 low-income families struggling with housing issues. We'll dedicate our 100th home on May 8th in Richmond, Kentucky. By my count, we have 8,104 to go. So we need volunteers who can be engaged in the effort. And I want to say, too, Habitat for Humanity is a grassroots organization. The chapters begin in the local community. So there are gaps in Kentucky, right, as far as families that we can serve. So if you're interested in starting an affordable housing effort in your community We'll be happy to help, whether it's a Habitat affiliate or something else. It's much needed. There are plenty of counties in Kentucky who need to be served.
And we'll make sure we put links to your organizations on our website at weku.fm. Councilmember Chris Ford, we're going to be looking forward to seeing what happens with this new Office of Homelessness Intervention and Prevention. Thank you for being with us, Chris Ford.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you, Tom Manning Beaven. Thank you, Judy Flavel.
Thank you so much
for being with us on this week's Eastern Standard. Associate producers are Andrew Moorhead, Logan Riley, and Richard Turner. Richard produced today's program. Our technical director is Jonies Franklin. And on the telephones, we've had help from Julie Tennell as well as support from Logan Riley. We remind you that this show will be available online later today. You can listen to it online from the website at weku.fm or download it as a podcast. Set up the podcast and you can listen to every week's show very soon after the broadcast. And the show, of course, repeats Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. Follow us on Twitter at WEKUEST and stay in touch with us and join us again next week for Eastern Standard on 88.9 WEKU. I'm John Hingsbergen. Thanks for listening.
It's 11:59. Thanks for joining us for Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Don't forget you can hear a rebroadcast of this week's edition Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. Up next, it's Here and Now from NPR and WBUR in Boston. Coming up next, we'll also get the latest news headlines from the WEKU newsroom. Sunny skies expected for the rest of today with highs eventually reaching into the middle 70s. Scattered rain and storms in store for tonight. Lows in the upper 50s. This is 88.9 WEKU Richmond-Lexington, 90.9 WEKH Hazard, 88.5 WEKF Corbin, and 90.1 WEKP Pineville, a community service of Eastern Kentucky University.
Support for NPR comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. MathWorks.com.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. Coming up, the FDA proposes regulations for e-cigs. What's missing?
Also, we spoke with an immigration reform advocate earlier this week. Today, the other side.
The idea that there's one class of people who can jump in front of 30, 40 million people around the world who've waited in line and patiently respected our system and our borders, that's just not the American way.
Also, supporters like Rand Paul are backing away from a land rights rancher after his comments today about blacks being better off in slavery.
These stories and actor Tom Hardy and director Steve Knight on their new movie, Lock, which is told through phone calls during a single car ride.
The technology that we now have means that we're all available to all parts of our lives at all times.
Coming up, Here and Now.
News is first.